morning. It's now 8:05. This is the Utilities Restructuring Committee. We have the chairman of the Public Utilities Commission, Sam Cotton, former House Speaker of mine and colleague for some years. We have the first bill that we're going to take up today. And we've got the prime sponsor to present that to us. It is my intention to listen only to the bill today. I don't intend to take action on moving it out. I'd like to have it presented to us. And then we're going to move over and invite Chairman Cotton before the committee, and we'll have some questions. We just received his February 11th annual report. It begs a few questions, and I think it also answers quite a few of them as well. So once again, our intention here this morning is to continue to expand our probing into the utilities issues before the state of Alaska. And also, I believe member Representative Rokeberg is also here. So we do have a quorum, and I'd ask now President Terrio, if you would maybe come before us, Mr. Vice Chairman.
No. Oh, everybody here. You
didn't. Oh, name I didn't everybody. Name everybody. I think I did, didn't I? No. Didn't I? I did it in my head. You guys didn't get it. Thank you. I'm so fast that I'm faster than myself. All right. We do have a quorum here. Members present are everybody just about. Our Representative Porter, Representative Cott, Representative Berkowitz, Representative Davies, the Vice Chair, John Cowdery, Mr. Rokeberg, and myself, Bill Hudson. I'm really screwed up now, you guys. I was way ahead of you before, you see. All right. So with that, Gene, if you would introduce the bill that we have before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gene Terrio. I'm a representative to House District 33. The bill we have before you, the bill that you have before you, House Bill 62, is pretty brief in its scope, but I will point out that it purposefully has a very broad title. Under AS4205 and AS4206, the Alaska Public Utilities Commission regulates public utilities by certifying qualified providers of public utility and pipeline services. It is designed to ensure that utilities provide safe and adequate services and facilities at a reasonable rate. The five-member commission also determines the eligibility and per kilowatt hour support for electric utilities under the Power Cost Equalization Program. The Alaska Public Utilities Commission is set to expire on June 30, 1999, under AS4466.010, termination of state boards and commissions. If the legislature does not act to extend the commission, it would have 1 year until June 30th, year 2000, to conclude its affairs. House Bill 62 would extend the commission for another 4 years. The title is intentionally, as I mentioned before, has left been broad enough to allow leeway for discussion of several issues of concern that have arisen during the past 4 years of the Commission's existence. Mr. Chairman, I believe the members received a copy of the annual report that was this, which you received yesterday, and I received a copy yesterday also and spent last night flipping through it. It does do a pretty good job of outlining the scope of the Commission's duties. Walks through, gives a little bit of information about the different commissioners. But I will note that in the very beginning, in the mission statement, the last sentence says the commission does this, it carries out its duties by making timely decisions that balance the competing interests of various parties fairly while keeping red tape to a minimum. I think, however, the internal report done by the commission shows that that statement may be a little bit misleading. In fact, I know in Fairbanks, a number of times either constituents or the local governments have come to members of the Interior delegation complaining about lack of timeliness on the commission in making its decisions. I have a copy of a letter here that members of the Interior delegation signed in June of 97, asking for help in getting to a decision on a solid waste permit that was pending. We had quite a bit of concern, and I believe you might have people on a teleconference today to testify about commission action or lack of action and the cost to the Fairbanks utility ratepayers while they were waiting for approval to sell their city-owned utilities. And I've had people tell me that that cost the ratepayers in Fairbanks hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, and unnecessarily so. So while the bill just asks for an extension of the commission, I personally am not convinced at this time that it should be extended. And I would leave that to you to discuss what perhaps structural changes need to be made, what policy changes need to be made on the commission or to the commission before the legislature actually does decide to extend it. I thought it was an important enough issue that it needed to be brought up for discussion, certainly, since we are coming up to the sunset year. But I believe there are a number of issues that that the legislature needs to consider. In the report that was done internally, one of the observations was that steps must be taken as early as possible to bring the backlog under control and address the issue of speedy processing of commission business. I think throughout this report there are a number of times when the timeliness issue is brought up, so clearly something within the commission is not working. And I believe also in this report it talks about problems of communication between commissioners, problems within the commission with regard to clear leadership, and that is leadership of staff and leadership of the overall commission. There's also an issue here dealing with, it says, the observation says, as the work of the APUC shifts towards more of policy making and away from the kinds of fact finding embedded in traditional rate cases, I'm not so sure that the APUC should be getting more and more into policy making. I think the legislature needs to consider whether the proper body for the policy making is the legislature, and that APUC should be restricted to then making the fact finding and rate setting cases. Also later it's in the report, it says, unfortunately, they do not work as well for future-oriented establishment of policy. And again, I'm not so sure that we shouldn't make a decision that the proper place for the policy is the legislature and not necessarily APUC. And again, throughout the report, the issue of timely decisions is brought up. And then finally, of the overall commission functioning, it says, in some respects, not much has changed over time at the commission. The upcoming sunset review of the commission will be important. The current level of discontent with the commission is higher than in the past over a variety of carriers. Some utilities seek help and relief from the commission. There's a mix of adversarial and cooperative relationships with the utilities, and stakeholders are not looking for radical changes. However, there is this growing discontent with the way that the commission works and comes to decisions. So I guess, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I think there's a lot here for this committee in particular to really try and grapple with. So I hope that you would view this not just as a clean extension of the sunset, but review some of these issues that we're hearing from our constituents, the actual companies, the constituents using the services, and try to come to a decision on what direction we want the APUC to go in the future. Who is the proper body to make the policy? Is it the legislature, or do we want to extend that authority to APUC? Are we confident that they can make those decisions, plus make the ongoing determinations of allegations, how to determine who's right in allegations between the different companies. Should they be restricted to that and we make the policy? They are able to, through a mechanism, charge a rate to pay for the services that they provide. If they allege that they need more staff, that's going to cause the rates that our constituents pay to go up. Is there a way of keeping control of that so that we don't start hearing from our constituents that they feel like they're paying too much for the service that they're getting? With that, I would answer questions if there are.
Thank you, Representative. I believe I forgot to indicate for the record that Representative Cotton is here. It's too early in the morning, Pete.
Right.
We do have a question of Representative Terrio. Before you ask your question, Representative Berkowitz, which I'm sure everybody knows that he's referring to the report on the Public Utilities Commission that was internally done, and you all have a copy of that. And with that, Representative Berkowitz.
Representative Terrio answered it as he went on.
Sorry, he did answer your question. All right. Any other questions?
Representative Hudson, one thing I also failed to
Representative Terrio?
Is that Legislative Budget and Audit will have their sunset review audit out soon also. And I think that would probably be some valuable information for this committee to possibly consider.
Walt, do we have that? Do we have the sunset audit? We have the audit.
No, it hasn't been released yet.
Okay, well, we'll get that and we'll see that you have that as well. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Representative. And I think we'll next ask Chairman of the APUC Board, Sam Cotton, if you'd please join us here. Good morning, Sam. Nice to have you here. Nice to see your smiling face again. Welcome back to Juneau.
Thank you.
I think you know everybody at the table here, so we'd like, if you wouldn't mind, maybe kind of walk us through the annual report which we've just received here, and maybe tell us a bit about issues, things that you would like us to know about the PUC, and if there's anything that in the issue of policy, we keep hearing this business about timeliness and cost, and I know you balance this relationship between protecting the consumer's interest as well as making certain that we have reliability and all of those other responsibilities you have. At any rate, thanks for coming down and welcome again.
Thank you, sir, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am here to discuss the APUC, especially in relation to the bill that's in front of you, the Sunset Bill. And as you mentioned, you just received our annual report. And I brought a few annual reports from a couple of other states, too, just in case you're interested in comparing how we stack up in regard to other states. And you'll find that there's a lot of similarities between what we're doing and experiencing here in Alaska and most other states. In large part as a result of the 1996 Act. This report will, and I'd be happy to go through whatever you like there, but it generally describes the nuts and bolts of the commission, our budget, our staffing level, membership, as well as a description of some of the significant events that have taken place over the last year. And we described several cases that we've dealt with. Happy to discuss any of those that you're interested in. There's also additional statistical information that we used to publish, but now it's on, or it soon will be on our website, that is a lot of detailed information that you may find useful as you deliberate on this bill or on other utility issues. That's going to be some potentially valuable information for you. We do have what I consider an excellent staff. We employ many professionals that assist the commission, and we often name our staff or parts of our staff a party to a case if that becomes necessary. We employ engineers, CPAs, communication specialists, tariff analysts, and many other dedicated people who work hard to try to serve the public. And in spite of many distractions and an increasingly large workload, I feel that our staff's able to focus on the tasks that are at hand. As I mentioned, and I think it's going to kind of be a recurrent theme, dealing with heavy workload and our ability to deal with issues timely. But again, as we discuss these kind of issues with commissioners from other states, other jurisdictions, we find that we're not alone in our difficulties. But we are handling the workload. But we also recognize that we need to do a better job. We need to be more timely. We need to be better able to handle the new issues that are presented to us as a result of a lot of new things that are happening in the utility industry. I spoke with a former commissioner when I first got on the commission and asked, what did you wish you would have done as a commissioner? And this person said, I always wanted to do a management audit because the workload's growing and we just find ourselves more and more or less and less able to keep up. And so I inquired about that and discovered that if you employed one of the big four, one of the accounting firms, or Arthur Anderson, one of these management groups, it was going to be an extremely expensive proposition. But became acquainted with an outfit called the National Regulatory Research Institute. They're associated with Ohio State University and are very familiar with state utility commissions. We contracted with them to come and do a self-assessment. The question we asked them was, help us do a better job. Help us identify the problems that we're facing. Help us figure out how to do a better job. And there's always a risk when you do that. When you ask somebody to criticize you, you're likely to get some criticism. And we did. And a lot of it wasn't news, but I think it was it helped us better define some of the things we needed to do better. And again, timeliness, I think, is one of the most often discussed problems about the commission. There are others. And I suspect that any organization has its problems. I think we're dealing with the issues we're supposed to deal with in spite of whatever problems we may be encountering. I think it's going to get better. But in the meantime, one of the things that the NRRI report, as well as your legislative auditors, have concentrated on is a short list, but they're big jobs. One suggestion is develop an MIS, which is a management information system. And what it really means is even though you may have a lot of raw data about how your operation works, how do you best use that data? How do you make it available to you in a way that will help you do a better job? We're working on that. We're putting together an RFP right now that will give us that tool. And again, that's one of the primary recommendations from your auditors and from the National Regulatory Research Institute. We've done a few other things. We've initiated what's referred to as a bench and bar, where we try to interact with the practitioners that come before us, the attorneys and the representatives of the utilities, on a more informal basis to ask not just how we're doing, but how could we do a better job? Where can we get rid of red tape? And we're making some progress there. We've only had a few of these so far, but it's our intention to have them on a regular basis, and I think they will be more and more valuable as we continue them. We've just recently instructed the staff to do a formal identification of the backlog that's with the commission right now in terms of which industry categorized the types of backlog that we're facing. One of the biggest suggestions that we've had both from NRRI, from practitioners, from the legislative auditors, especially the private sector auditor that the legislature employed, was to you need more people. Your workload has doubled over the last 5 years. And by the way, Bob Lohr is with us in teleconference in Anchorage there, and if people are interested in statistical information about how the workload's grown, we can give you that information, but believe me, it's gotten a lot bigger. And one thing that we recognize is that as we ask our staff to advise us on, for example, engineering issues, and there are 40 cases in front of us on engineering issues, and we've only got four engineers. It's pretty easy to see that that quickly becomes a problem. So with some struggle, this last fall, we, as a commission, recommended that that we add staff. We had, determined that we should add at least 9 new people to our staff. We were able to reprogram contractual funds, and we've been in contact with the with legislative members trying to make sure that they understood what we were doing. Got through the Office of Management Budget to make sure they knew what we were doing and we were approving of it. And had begun to recruit and hopefully about to begun to start hiring staff when we recently ran into this hiring freeze, and that's either stopped us or hopefully it's just slowed us down. At the commission, we have a, as you are well aware, have a budget that does not rely on general funds, and the assets, if you will, of the commission can't be converted to general fund dollars. So, for example, if we have money left over at the end of the year, that means that the payment the consumers make to fund our budget would go down the following year. So we're strictly
not continued over.
Pardon me?
It's not continued over.
Well, that depends upon the legislature. The legislature can appropriate carry forward funds, which you have done in the past, but that requires action by the legislature.
Thank you.
We can't make that decision ourselves. So again, I've been working with the department we're affiliated with, the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, trying to see if there's a way we can improve our ability to gather resources in spite of the hiring freeze. Haven't heard for sure how that's going to work out, but I know that's on everybody's minds here as far as the constraints you're faced with. So we're trying to work through that. In the meantime, we're all still hard at it. Another thing I think that we gleaned from the report that the self-assessment we did was that as commissioners, we can and should take more individual responsibility for speed and quality of the work that we do. We have 5 commissioners. As chairman, I assign the work, and we divided up, and each individual commissioner has responsibility for a certain docket or set of dockets. Those as a docket manager, when you're assigned a docket, you're responsible to keep up with the motions that are made by the parties on that particular docket, ensure that they're brought before the commission in a timely fashion, and we have paralegals and a hearing officer that help us produce and get the orders out that would respond to those motions. Again, there's an increased workload there. Everybody's got quite an extensive portfolio, if you will. Each of the states has a utilities commission. I believe it makes sense to continue the Public Utilities Commission here in Alaska. Obviously, there are policy issues that the legislature may choose to decide themselves, and that's certainly not a problem with the commission. We read the statute and are guided by it, and our job is made easier if the statutes are clear. And if you want to give the commission direction, we're anxious to follow it. We are working closely right now, as Mr. Wilcox pointed out, with the legislative auditors. I don't believe that they've even so far we've had one informal letter from the auditors asking us to respond to a couple of points. We've done that. I believe the next step is we'll get a formal recommendation, we'll respond to that, and then I think it'll be delivered to the Legislative Audit Committee. I believe that's the normal path. As far as policy issues are concerned, like it or not, we're faced with a lot of them, and you're welcome to them, but they're in front of us as a result of a lot of new things. For example, the 1996 Act delegates a lot of decisions to the state commissions. As we see the interconnection efforts by, in Anchorage, for example, to the two competitors to ATU, just a lot of issues that nobody ever envisioned come up, and we have to make decisions about how they should be handled. One example of a policy issue that we decided had to do with how long should it take for a company to transfer a customer if that customer elects to choose a different provider. The typical example would be a ATU customer that wants to switch to GCI. How long should it take? So we were asked to make that decision, and we did. We said it should take 7 days. That was after hearing both sides. The commission members toured the facilities, the wire centers, tried to understand what it really meant, what it really took to switch that customer. But those are that is an example of a policy issue that the commission is called upon to decide, and they may or may not be suitable for a legislative resolution. I'll quit there. I see there's some people that want to ask questions, and happy to try to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Davies, you had a question, sir.
Well, just on that last point, I wondered if maybe, as I read the NRI report, I saw the phrase policy making appear in there several times, and I flagged it almost every time it appeared. Kind of wondered what, but as I went through it more, I began to wonder if there was a different definition of the term policymaking than what we normally would use. And I wondered if you could distinguish between the kind of thing that you just talked about and policymaking and rulemaking. Is there it seems to me that in that report, the term policymaking might be more like rulemaking than what we would think of as broad policy determination. And I'm wondering if that's correct.
I could give an example of another area, and it's one that this committee may be more familiar with, and it has to do with the electric restructuring issue. The statutes right now empower the commission to determine whether there should be competition in electricity, for example. Right now, if a person wants to compete in the electricity markets, they are required to come to the commission, apply for a certificate. We're supposed to find whether they're fit, willing, and able, according to law, and whether the public convenience and necessity requires it, and whether it's affirmatively consistent with the public interest to have competition. That's the way the law is written right now. Should the legislature choose to change that policy and say that there should be or there must be competition in the electricity industry, then that would be an example of a policy decision that would have to be made here or with the legislature. The way it sits right now, you told us to make those decisions based on the criteria listed in law. But with the Telecom Act and with a lot of new things coming our way, we are called upon to make decisions which often result in a policy call.
Follow up?
To take your first example, how long it takes to transfer a customer, within the context of the Public Utilities Commission, that's often referred to as a policy-making decision. Is that correct?
It's a matter of which definition you choose, but I consider that a policy call, and that may not be the best example. There may be other policy decisions people have observed the commission making that perhaps to some should be made elsewhere.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Yeah, I know that timely decisions is a big issue in APUC. How big is your backlog, would you say, if nothing else came in? How long would it take you to get caught up right now?
I can't even give you a real good answer on that. I can give you some examples of different areas where the backlog is located. For example, we have a hearing officer, and that person is assigned to write orders after we've made decisions. So after we've made the decision, we've only got one person that writes it, and we've got some paralegals that are helping on us now. After last year's budget increase, we have three more paralegals. But there's probably 25 decisions that the commission's already made that haven't been written yet. That's an example of a backlog that we think will be helped by getting these positions we've asked for. We've asked for another hearing officer, and we have one vacancy with our paralegals. So once those are filled, I think that's going to cut the time required in half to meet that backlog. The executive director's online, but we could give another example of he may or may not have it at his fingertips. But again, as I mentioned, the engineering department will be assigned a certain number of cases. I don't know if Mr. Lohr is online. Would you mind if I asked?
Mr. Lohr, this is Chairman Hudson. Are you on the line, sir? Anchorage, are you on the line? We're supposed to have Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Matt Sue on the line.
Telecommunications people are checking right now.
I can get you some better numbers on that, but I can give you some other examples. I spoke with, and often people who have cases in front of the commission will call and say, what's happening? I've had this in here for a year now, and I still haven't got a decision. So I followed up on one of those, for example, and there was an application to do something, and it took some back and forth between our staff and the applicant before the application was perfected. They hadn't filled out some of the paperwork correctly. And so when that was finally done, it's been sitting with our engineering department for about a month now after the application's complete. I inquired as to how soon would you be able to get to that. They thought at least another month before they would. So I'd say we're at least a couple of months behind, whereas if we had more staff there, more people to do the work, I think we'd be able to move that up by a factor of a couple of months. Those are rough. That's a very rough response to your question. As I mentioned, we're in the process of doing a clear identification of backlog that would probably give you a better answer.
Follow up, Mr. Vice Chair.
So you're basically probably never going to get caught up. Is that what you say?
I'd say we're unlikely to get caught up to where, I'd say yes.
How many decisions, or say, have you came up with in the last week or month or 3 months, or what would be an appropriate time frame for a decision?
Well, there's no average decision. We decide there's a lot of routine decisions we make. People that apply to resell telecommunications services, that's a decision that turns around in a relatively short period of time. And that there isn't an average number of those that get done a week. It's a matter of how often they come in. And then we have other decisions that we make. For example, one of the major cases that's in front of the commission right now deals with the sale of the PTI properties and ATU. So that's a lengthier process because we're obviously going to go through a filing and a schedule, and we're going to have public hearings and consumer input hearings on that. So that's going to last quite a bit longer. I can give you a report as to how we report weekly the number of orders that the commission produces. I can get you that number.
Let me make sure that we have Anchorage back on the line first, Mr. Vice Chair. Anchorage, my understanding you've been off the line. Are you on there now, please? Mr. Bob Lohr?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We just rejoined you about 1 minute ago.
Okay. If you would stand by because we may have a question to you. How about Fairbanks? Are you on the line, please?
Fairbanks is online.
Matsu? Matsu, are you on the line?
Matsu is online.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Vice Chair, continue.
Yes. What? A couple of questions. If you have a solution to the delirium you're in, is it more more commission members? Could you privatize anything? What's your opinion on that?
I think I don't think we need more commissioners, but
that was the right answer.
So far, so good, Sam.
It is possible. We've had some experience with some private assistance. We have one contract employee who is our administrative law judge for pipeline affairs, and that person is not a state employee. It's a private contractor for our administrative law judge. When ATU first started interconnecting, we decided along with ATU and GCI and AT&T to employ a person who's an arbitrator or an arbiter. An attorney lives in Anchorage, and he's paid by the utilities. And a lot of disputes that are that would otherwise have to come to the commission now go to that person. So we've had some experience in experimenting with alternative dispute resolution from the private sector.
Can you say that was productive, or you thought that was?
Yeah, it's kind of breaking new ground, but we've had some success with it. But there's been some complaints about it too.
One last question. What issue's been before the commission the longest in your mind? And how long would that be?
And Mr. Laura is on the line if you need help, Chair.
I don't know. I can think of a few that have been around for a long time. There's a couple of them that deal with PURPA, and that's it deals with a federal law that allows an entity to sell electricity to an existing utility. And there's a lot of confusion about the way the federal law needs to operate, and we've had a lot of difficulty with the two cases that have been in front of us for at least a couple of years. Now there may be some cases that have been there longer than that. They don't come to mind immediately.
Thank you, Representative Roquefort.
Mr. Chairman,
and then Representative Berkowitz.
I know a lot of questions. How many witnesses do you have this morning? Do we need to make sure we hurry up?
We have two online that have asked to testify. One of them is Bob Lohr, and the other one is George Gordon from Fairbanks. And Linda, perhaps, I don't know if anybody signed up here to testify.
Yeah, just to move along.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman Cotton, I want to really compliment you on blowing the whistle on yourself by bringing in the self-assessment. I mean, I think that was very important, particularly when we have comments, and we've heard comments about the commission characterized as a dysfunctional, cumbersome, costly, inefficient, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you've heard all this, you know, and I appreciate that. So I do appreciate you having the self-assessment done. And I think we could go into that further about how it's being implemented, but in the interest of time, I'd just like to ask you a couple of questions on some specific issues that I think need to be addressed. One, do you think the commission is ready and believes that the competition in local telephone service is in the public interest, and that do you think the commission is ready to take up that issue based solely on the technical grounds of the Telecom Act of 96?
Yes, sir. And I have to be very careful how I answer this because we're, as you know, called upon to make objective decisions after people apply. As you may recall, last year there was an application to compete in Fairbanks and Juneau. As a result of the guidance given to us by the federal law, we concluded that we had to say no to the request to remove the rural exemption in Fairbanks and Juneau. We also announced and reported to the legislature that one of the reasons that we couldn't make that decision was that we needed to change some regulations that we had. The regulations that had been in place envisioned a monopoly system. And when it came time to qualify for subsidies and access charge issues, universal service issues, the regulations we had in place, again, envisioned a monopoly. We promised to change those regulations before this session of the legislature began, and I believe Lieutenant Governor Ulmer signed those new regulations, if not before, within a day or two of when you convened. So we felt we accomplished what we promised to do. Right now, I've been expecting another application to come before the commission to remove the rural exemption. I won't forecast how the commission would respond to that at this time, but at least the major roadblock that we identified in my mind has been removed given that consideration.
Mr. Chairman, along that lines, though, there's a case in Superior Court, and you're basically waiting, are you not, for a remand back to take up the issue, or are you waiting for another application for filing?
It's kind of out of the hands of the commission right now. The GCI appealed the decision that the commission made to the Superior Court. Since that appeal, the United States Supreme Court has made a decision that overturned the Eighth Circuit. And this gets you need a little roadmap on this, but the bottom line is there's a suggestion that the Alaska Public Utilities Commission committed a procedural error. And we don't know that for sure, but that's a strong suggestion from the Supreme Court decision. The FCC said that the state commissions have to place the burden of proof on this removal of the rural exemption question on the incumbent local exchange carrier. The Eighth Circuit said, no, the state gets to decide that themselves. We said that the burden of proof had to be on the competitor. Now, it appears that the Supreme Court has said, no, the FCC was right all along. So it may be that this Superior Court judge will remand that decision to the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. That hasn't happened. Nobody has petitioned for that remand at this point.
If that were to happen, and it would be a remand, how quickly do you think the commission would take that up? Because there are some bills pending here, and if they would be moot if you were to take that up on remand.
Well, if the Superior Court judge sends it back to the commission for remand, we would immediately have a pre-hearing conference and set a schedule for a procedural schedule to deal with it.
And let's turn off. I noticed recently in the newspaper there was an advertisement you're calling, I believe, for public comment on the establishment of an Alaska Universal Service Fund. Could you explain to the committee what that is and what's going on there?
Yes, sir. And my guess is you're going to get a lot of questions about this. But one of the things that the Telecom Act provided and gave instruction to the state commissions to do was remove implicit subsidies. The telephone industry there's a lot of subsidies. For example, Alaska receives somewhere between $50 and $70 million a year in universal service funds as subsidies to the phone companies in Alaska. A good example is Matanuska Telephone Association receives about $20 million a year because Alaska is considered to be a high-cost area. So those funds come into Alaska. Another subsidy has been through access charges. If you're not familiar with access charges, those are the funds that long-distance companies pay to local companies to terminate calls. Your long-distance company, you pay a local company for the privilege of terminating a call on their equipment. It had been that the long-distance companies were paying, in addition to what it actually costs, although this gets a little controversial, they were paying some subsidies for some of the high-cost areas in Alaska. What we've done is, as a result of a law that allows us to do this, have made that an explicit subsidy. And now you'll see on your phone bills a few cents a month that will pay that now directly. The point is, you were paying it before, you didn't even know it. You were paying it through your long-distance bills. Now you're going to be paying it directly, and you'll see it. The benefit of that, according to federal law and from our perspective, is that now you have an identified target should you wish to attack or investigate or question whether that ought to be paid at all. It's in front of you. It's something that's easily identifiable now.
Well, Mr. Chairman, does that go into a fund administered in the state of Alaska, or does it go into the Federal Universal Service Fund?
State.
Is it a separate fund from the federal fund then?
Yes, sir.
It's like a new fund.
Yes, sir.
And then are we running risk of losing our federal funding?
Not because of that.
Because Senator Stevens is going to retire or what?
Alaska's not the only state that's vitally interested in universal service funds. And there are other subsidy programs that, in addition to universal service, that there hasn't actually been any funds distributed yet, but the Telecom Act also said that there will be subsidies for rural health care providers, for schools and libraries. And that funding hasn't come forward yet, but some fear that will compete with universal service funds that states like Alaska now enjoy the benefit of. But this is completely separate.
Mr. Chairman, just to conclude here, but the $20 million that the Matsu is getting in the MTA, is that in jeopardy in any way because of, or being phased out because of FCC rulings or federal statutes?
Well, it's always potentially in jeopardy, but certainly not because of anything this state's done or this state commission has done. There's a possibility that the United States Congress could change the rules on how those funds are distributed or who might be eligible to receive them. But I think at the moment there's strong support for it. Certainly our congressional delegation are strong defenders of that program.
Representative Berkowitz.
Thanks very much. Sam, I'd like a little historical context on this. I'm curious to know why the whole notion of public utilities commissions developed and how it happened here and sort of what went on before there was a PUC.
Good question.
I'm not playing stump the commissioner.
No, that's all right. Just generally, utility commissions came about as a result of the proposition that in exchange for a monopoly, utilities had to submit to regulation of rates. That's the primary reason why utility commissions ever came into existence. Since then, there have been other reasons and other functions that commissions have fulfilled, but that was the primary motivation for having a regulatory body such as a Public Utilities Commission.
Follow up?
Two follow-ups. First of all, I haven't been doing this as long as these other guys here. So, how are we defining utility? What's a utility? And if the initial role of the Utilities Commission was to be a rate regulatory body vis-a-vis a monopoly, how has that evolved over time?
Well, your state law, number one, defines what a public utility is. And I can give you that site, but it's in the statutes. It's a definition.
It's also in page 13 of the commission's February 11th report, I believe. At least it indicates the areas, jurisdiction over the operations of, and I think that's essentially what it covers.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Well, I was more interested in the characteristics rather than an itemization of what's okay. covered. I mean, for example, it occurs to me that internet access could conceivably be construed as a utility, and that's not something that was, I'm sure, contemplated.
Maybe power cost, yeah.
Well, a good example is cable TV. Now, that's considered a utility, but it's dealt with differently than most other utilities in Alaska. For example, we do not regulate cable TV unless a community requests the commission to regulate. Juneau is the only city in Alaska that's made that request, and it's not much regulation there. By the way, but that's a function of state law. Another function that carries forward the idea of a regulatory commission is defined in Title 42.05.141, where you have defined general powers and duties of the commission. So here you've instructed us to do certain things, and then in order to provide utility service, an entity is required to get a certificate, and they're under 221. The requirements for obtaining a certificate are outlined, and then we also have regulation that further defines what the statutes say. But another function that we do besides rate regulation is we ensure that an entity is fit, willing, and at all times. An example of a bad utility would be someone that didn't have the proper financing to keep their operation going, and your lights went out, and they were the only utility in town. So that's a rough example of what could happen if they weren't required to have a certificate and maintain standards.
This is my last question.
Your last one. Yeah.
What would happen if the PUC went away?
If the PUC went away, you'd have to examine Title 42 and decide who would perform these functions if you wanted anybody to.
All right, thank you very much. I don't believe the record reflects Representative Green's arrival here, which was immediately after we started up, but we got going so fast here, Joe, we didn't get you on the record, but you are next in your question, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As an alternate to the member who is here, would you prefer that I wait till every...
No, absolutely. Just pretend like you know, you're one of the family.
Okay. Well, thank you, and with the indulgence of the members. Mr. Cotton, I'm going to go into a hypothetical, and that you are a CEO of an organization that has some very important direct reports, divisions, so on and so forth, and you get a report card from one of your division directors that said slow, unreliable, meddlesome, argumentative, burdensome. What would you do under a circumstance like that? Now, this is actually not the first report. This is kind of a summation of things that have come to your attention before.
I may have different choices available to me if I was a CEO than I do at this point. But and I don't mean to be flippant, but obviously you have to take that very seriously, and we're all, you know, here to serve the public. So our job is to avoid disruption, avoid distraction, concentrate on the businesses in front of us. So what you do is you find ways to make sure you get to do that. And I've outlined a few of the things that we've are in the process of doing that would address the situation that that we face. That and again, you know, we recognize that we have some difficulties to face.
May I follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow up, Representative Green.
If in following up you find that there are indications, if not outright accusations, that there is warring among the majority, in this case the commission, we're just after the chase here, that there is a turmoil among the members of the commission, and perhaps even worse, that there is a fairly strong feeling that the commission members will delve far too deeply into the activities that they have this huge staff to do. And as a result, they are partially brought up to speed, but they really impede the progress of the staff. Do you have anything to say about those types of things that certainly slow down the activity?
Well, I think that you ask a very legitimate question, and it's probably no secret that there has been less than unanimity of opinion about how the administration of the commission ought to be handled. Since before I got there, a majority of the commission felt that there were problems. I think we've had a lot easier time over the last 3 years since I've been there than what I have been informed that took place before I got there. It's just difficult to discuss without risking any finger pointing, and I don't think any of us are pure in that regard. But I see that there's a good potential for improvement in the relatively near future on that general topic.
Representative Green.
Follow up. This is a matter of public record, but for this record, can you tell me what the salary of the commissioners are?
Yeah, we're in by statute range 26C, I believe, and that's approximately 72,000.
And there are five of you.
Yes, sir.
And do you have a ballpark number for the cost of the staff?
Yeah, our budget is just under $5 million. That includes and it'll be less than that just because we have right now, I think, 41 people on staff, and we're authorized, I think, 56 as a result of the increases that were recently approved. We had five vacant positions and nine new positions approved. In addition, we have contractual funds, and we RSA to the Department of Law for legal advice, and obviously have other expenses that are outlined in our annual report.
And then, I guess, the penultimate question would be, are you aware of the varying estimates of the cost of delayed decisions have on the utilities that you are regulating?
Yes, sir. It's been brought to our attention, as I think as Representative Terrio pointed out, during the disposition of the utilities by the municipality of Fairbanks. We were pretty regularly reminded that the longer we took, the more it was costing them.
Now, will those additional costs be part of the rate base? Will the utilities have to eat these delays, or are they going to be able to pass those on, and then every person who flips a switch will be paying part of that delay?
I'm not sure I can answer that question easily. In the case of Fairbanks, the city allowed us how they were losing money as a result of a delay. The utility didn't suffer any rate base elements. I'm not sure. So maybe that's not a good example. And maybe another example would be if a utility loses money as a result of delay by the commission, does that get built into the rate base? I suppose it could.
And then finally.
Finally, Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With the turmoil that seems to exist and the accusations, as far as I know, there hasn't been any change yet. I mean, there's still this involvement and argument with the staff that you actually have. Is there any merit to one of the discussions that I've had, well, several I've had? One of the issues is that maybe it would be better to sunset and start over again. Obviously, you've indicated, and I concur, that in a monopolistic utility area, you do need some regulation. But if that regulation is so snarled up and in such a bucket of worms, is there maybe merit to just starting over again?
That's a policy call.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, let me try a little better to respond to that. I don't mean to be capricious in my answer. It's like a lot of things. I mean, it's like any institution that you're a part of. After you've been there a while, you understand how it works. You know that it can work. I think we've been making good steps toward improving how it works. I believe that there's going to be some other changes that happen in the relatively near future that are going to further improve our ability to work. So you try to concentrate on what you've got and try to make it work. And I think that we're getting there and we'll get there. But if you step back a little bit, like where you're sitting, and maybe are better able to enjoy the luxury of considering a whole new ball game. And sure, you can do that. I'm not sure it would be, I'm not sure how objective a person sitting in my seat could be about that. I think that would be a pretty drastic step. I don't think it's necessary, but.
I lied. Is it personality, do you think, rather than function?
let the record show.
Oh, I think there's some of that. I think that's probably inherent.
Representative Porter. Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chairman. Sam, it seems like deja vu all over again. We had this conversation about a year ago, I think, and there were some recommendations for and approvals of an increase in staff and budget. Have you not been able to do any expansion in the last year?
We've done some. We've hired on the commission side. We've hired some paralegals, and we've got. We were authorized to hire a couple more, and we've got one more on board now. We had two. One just took a better job someplace else. Paralegals start at range 13. After a year, they can go to a range 16. The last two people we hired as paralegals had law degrees. They were looking for a better job, so it isn't that easy to keep people that are at that pay range. So, but we will be able to. The other employees that we hired dealt with more of the administrative functions. We need now, what we're asking for now is more professionals in order to help the commission speed the workload that the professionals handle.
The nine positions that you mentioned, how long have they been available?
We just recently authorized those, or we got those through, not quite through OMB and the governor's office, and then the freeze hit us. So it's been a few months since the commission acted to request those. I think I spoke to you about that. It's probably been a couple of months.
Have you asked for an exception on the hiring freeze?
Yes, we have.
You get a hand on one, you'd know.
Well, I'm meeting with some folks while I'm in Juneau this today, hopefully, to get some further information on that. I think most people understand that we're in a different category of budget. We don't affect the general fund, but it's still numbers of employees that you have to answer questions about when people ask you about the budget. So I think people are cautious about approving and saying yes to new positions when, even though they aren't general fund, they still show up as more state employees. And so we're doing our best to explain to people and make sure people understand why we're different, but there's still some concern, I suspect, not only on the executive branch's part, but on yours as well.
One follow-up, an awful lot of the things I wanted to ask has been discussed. Sam, from the outside, and recognizing it's very easy from the outside to make decisions, having made some on the legislature before I was on the inside, it seems to me that some of the backlog is generated by two or three major decisions being held off an inordinate length of time, which seems to build up a whole bunch of little ones that surround the major ones, competition and all those kinds of things. Have you had any thoughts along these lines or suggestions along these lines?
I suppose that's possible. I'm kind of drawing a blank right now as to what that might be referring to right there, but I can see where there could be some, easily be some logic in what you're saying. And it's the internal decision-making process is it's probably a little more unusual than most people realize. We deliberate in what's known as an adjudicatory setting. And that means that the five commissioners and sometimes advisory staff sit in a room in private, and our deliberations are not open to the public. And as you might guess, there are times when it's difficult to arrive at a decision. And that almost sounds like an excuse, and I promised myself I wouldn't make any here today, but it's difficult to make some decisions sometimes. I guess, again, I'm not sure that I can identify some of an issue you might be hinting at there.
Representative Porter?
Just one more follow-up. And I guess I won't ask the answer now, but I'd be interested in anything that, as chairman, you might bring forward later. In your knowledge of other commissions and how they work and other jurisdictions, is there another system that perhaps might avoid that kind of problem that you know of?
Well, I'm still convinced that this management information system is going to be a major help to us to identify. We've got just a lot of different categories of work that's in front of us, and a better ability to track that and on my part, as chairman, I mean, I have to assume a lot of that responsibility, and it's going to make my job a lot easier once we get a system like that in place. And the fact is, things do fall through the cracks, or if certain people are responsible for bringing forward business to the commission and don't do it, I should know about that. And even though we all have to assume individual responsibility, if it's not assumed, somebody has to take that responsibility, and I'm going to better be able to do that with some, you know, some tools like that I've described.
Just one more. Is this what you say is coming down the road that's going to help a lot, or is maybe some commissioner changes going to help a lot?
We're about to issue an RFP on this. We're in the process of putting together an RFP on this MIS. As far as your other question, there's some uncertainty about that.
You mentioned a couple of times that you expect that the backlog and all this is going to be substantially assisted by future events. But what future events are you referring to?
Well, there could be some turnover in the commission, and that may or may not occur. There's some uncertainty about that at the moment, but it's possible that could assist us, although I don't want to say that in a way that would make any negative comments about anybody, so I'm trying to be cautious here.
Thank you very much. Representative Cott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's been so long, I think I forgot what I was going to ask.
I got your question, though.
I have no more than 39 questions for Sam, so I won't. One more question, just a follow-up. Sam, I want to compliment the commission for what they've done over the last few years, especially with the Telecommunications Act coming down, and now we have electrical restructuring on the horizon. So I know your job is not an easy one. I'm not envious of what you're doing, but I certainly applaud what you're doing. First question would be, and I might have missed it earlier on, but with the audit that was done by the legislature, did they recommend increasing your staff?
Well, the audit recommendations haven't been delivered to you yet. They're still being formulated. As you may know, the Legislative Audit Committee initially contracted out to Mukunda Cottrell to do the audit. The initial response we got from them, and I don't believe it's confidential, but it was informal, was that yes, you definitely need more resources. They identified that pretty quickly. They made some other comments like the MIS, and they had other things to say, but then it came back to the legislative auditors and for the final recommendation, and it's been my impression that they've been more cautious about recommending more staff. Perhaps they're more politically sensitive. That's just a speculation on my part.
Next question I have for you, Sam, is on the National Regulatory Research Institute's study. When I read it, and I must be frank, I haven't read each and every page, but I've at least got a pretty good basic understanding of what they're getting at here. But they're suggesting that most of the problems that exist within the APUC are, in fact, internal. They go into a litany of discussions on various aspects to include decisions not being rendered in a timely fashion and based on who they interview. It may be such a way that those decisions are held up at every level, sitting on the commissioner's desk to perhaps the person doing the analysis, and it's wide fold. It's across the board, and I think I'm kind of getting to where Representative Green perhaps got with the internal turmoil in the commission dealing with personalities. But one of the recommendations that I do recall seeing in the report is that they suggest that you should follow an administrative model that's perhaps done in other states, which would allow the commissioners greater access to your experts on the staff. Evidently, from my reading and understanding, there appears to be a rigid wall between the commissioners and the technical experts. Can you just comment on that, if that in fact is a truism, or is it just something that they glanced over and just took a parting shot?
Well, a couple things. Number one, as I mentioned earlier, we often find ourselves in a position where we have to name our staff a party to a case. An example would be a telephone company comes in and asks for a rate increase. Nobody else comments on it. Typically, in that case, we'd appoint our staff to be an advocate on behalf of the public. And so you'd have two parties in front of you filing briefs, and then during a hearing, the cross-examination would take place like that. So when we do that, those staff who are named as advocates are off limits. We're not allowed to talk to them about that case because that would be an ex parte communication, just as if we were to talk to the telephone company. Under those circumstances, yes, we've taken those people away from the commission and removed them as advisors. Before I was on the commission, whenever that would happen, the entire staff would be designated as an advocate. Right before I was appointed to the commission, they made a change there, and now we only appoint part of the staff, and so others are still available to advise the commission. And it's a matter of choice on the part of the commission members individually and as a commission as to whether we want to take advantage of the expertise that's available to us. Some do, some don't.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have another question.
Go ahead, please.
I am evidently there was some action taken by the commission last week regarding a resolution, and the title of it, Structural Changes, Redefinition of Roles, and Altering Lines of Responsibility. And from my looking over the four areas here, it looks like there is a greater degree of control that's extended now over the executive director. And also looking at the lines of communication on your organizational chart, specifically it looks like Mr. Lohr would be supervisor of Agnes Pitts. Is that correct?
Yes, Agnes is the head of the Consumer Protection Division, and her immediate supervisor is the executive director.
In the first resolution, part of the resolution, it indicates that the executive director will have no contact with the news media unless explicitly directed by the majority of the commissioners. Yet, she supervises Ms. Pitts, and she's not under the same constraints. Can you just comment why that is happening?
Didn't make any sense to me either, Representative.
Was this resolution passed via a vote?
3-2.
It wasn't a unanimous
no.
situation. Which would suggest to me that there's still some internal problematic personnel issues that exist within. Just looking this over, that was the first thing I got from it. Within
right.
the APC. I don't know if that's among the commissioners or staff commissioners or director or what, but I mean there's a problem here, and I can't put my finger on it, but
I'm happy to try to respond, and at the same time I want to be respectful of the people I work with, but it was made clear by at least one of the commissioners that they were unhappy about a personnel matter that had occurred earlier. We had an employee who had some difficulty, and I was informed that at least one of the commissioners was unhappy about how that difficulty was handled. And we went into executive session to discuss it with the executive director. We came out of executive session, and then this motion showed up on the agenda for the next public meeting. My impression that was an expression of displeasure at how the executive director handled that employee situation.
Representative Cott, are you continuing?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one more question for Mr. Cott. I appreciate his candid response so far. Sam, we're exiting what I would call the telephone industry competition arena, at least the initial thoughts regarding it, and now entering the electrical restructuring portion of competition. I know you guys got a heavy backlog of on your docket. Probably many of those issues surround this whole area of electrical restructuring and deregulation, if you will. I know there's at least one application for one utility to provide service in another utilities certificated area. I'm aware that there is an application for a pilot project supposedly going to occur in the municipality of Anchorage. I know that we have an independent study that's been commissioned by the legislature, supported by APC and others, to ascertain what those implications of electrical restructuring might be in Alaska. Can you just give me your thoughts as we head down this tumultuous trail of following electrical vibes as to what position the APUC would take, either a position that would be out front of the legislature, that would be aligned with the legislature, or would you wait for us to provide some guidance in this whole area of electrical restructuring? If you just comment on that.
As you know, the commission worked with the legislative committee. I know Representative Roekberg and others were interested in further exploring this whole question of restructuring and does it make sense for Alaska. And one consensus point was that we all needed to know a lot more about it. So that's the study that's been commissioned. CH2M Hill got the contract. I think the APUC put up $200,000 for this contract. It's being jointly managed by the legislature and the APUC. One element of that study is the pilot project that you referred to. Meanwhile, Aurora is the company that's proposing to do a pilot in Anchorage. They have an application in front of us right now. We've got a schedule for their filings and a hearing. We're going to consider that independently. By the time we have the hearing, we expect to have had some benefit from that study, some information that we'd be able to glean from that study. All parties will. The people proposing the pilot program, those who may oppose it, and the commission will all have the benefit of some of the what that study would have to offer. So that's an independent case that's in front of the commission right now. I don't have an opinion on that at the moment. I'm not supposed to. I'm supposed to wait and hear what the parties have to say. In regard to other restructuring issues, as I mentioned earlier, the way the law reads right now is we're supposed to make a determination as to whether or not a person's fit, willing, and able, and whether the public interest requires a utility to operate. So until an entity comes before us and applies to provide electricity, for example, in a service area that's already got electricity being provided by another utility, we won't even face that question. If that happens, then we will require them to show why it would be in the public interest for that to occur. We would examine questions that, for example, what would happen to the stranded investments. Some of the same questions that the study that's been commissioned will address. What do you do about those things? Who pays for that? And other states have had some experiences, but most states aren't set up the way Alaska is. As you well know, in the rail belt, they're all publicly owned, either muni-owned or co-op owned. Typically, in the rest of America, that's not the case. There's a different motive for operating a utility there. They're IOUs, investor-owned utilities. They're profit motive. So there's a different attitude about utilities in other parts of the country than you might find in the rail belt. So there's different issues that we have to consider. And if the public stood to gain and somebody applying to compete were able to show that the public would benefit from that, we all should expect a favorable response from the commission. If not, just the opposite.
On that point, Mr. Chair.
Just one moment, please.
Not a follow-up, Mr. Chairman, but on that point.
All right, let him go ahead and conclude. You're next.
Just a point of clarification then, Sam. On the, we'll use Aurora Forest as such a pilot project application. On that particular application, will the commission render a final decision before the independent study has been completed and provided to both you and the legislature?
No, I'm not sure. It seems like that pilot program is an early deliverable in regard to the terms of that contract. Our hearing was scheduled August 10th, and the parties just requested an extension of that. So I think that hearing won't take place until November of this year. And a decision should be rendered soon after the hearing. I'm under the impression that we will have been able to enjoy the benefit of that study before then. That's my belief.
Thank you,
Mr. Cox. Representative Davies, you're next. We do have Mr. Vasconi on the line in Anchorage and George Gordon in Fairbanks, and we're running fast out of time, so if we could make this pretty crisp, and the response is pretty crisp here. And we also have Jim Rowe from the ATA, who's also here in Juneau and wants to, no, I guess he's in Anchorage. And
he's right here.
Well,
it says here Anchorage, but it's, I thought I saw you, Jim. Okay, go ahead, your question,
just
please.
Just one very, I think, fairly quick amplification, clarification. Do you have now an application in front of you, or have you ever had an application in front of you to actually, for an electrical utility to compete in the service area of another electrical utility?
Not to my knowledge.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Roper.
I believe that was a technical answer. If I could follow up on that, Chairman Cotton, have you had a docus before you asking for one utility to sell power in another service area?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, and I didn't mean to be deceptive on the answer. The question was, has anybody applied to compete? And the answer to that was no. Now, Chugach and MLNP have been disagreeing about whether or not Chugach has an inherent right to do it. And MLNP complained to the commission that Chugach was attempting to sell power to their customers. We investigated that complaint. Chugach asserted that they had a right to do that without our permission. We disagreed there in Superior Court.
Sure, on that point?
On that point.
He's gone, so he can't complain.
That's right.
About it.
Representative Green.
Sam, back, I guess it was in the early 80s when Chugach and MLNP had the dispute over whose lines were going to be used, and they finally came up with a blocked out area, and then they kind of went their separate ways. Was that a PUC decision, or was that a cooperatively arrived at decision between the two utilities?
I'm not sure I can give you a good answer on that. I wasn't there at the time. It was my impression that there was legislative involvement. I believe they were probably in court at the time, and I believe the PUC played a role, but I can't give you a better answer than that.
Thank you. Sam, I want to have you just stay right there, if you wouldn't mind, while we take a couple on the teleconference here, because there may be some questions that will be posed to you. Next time, I'm going to go to Fairbanks, and I'll take George Gordon. And Mr. Gordon, if you could make your questions pretty direct, and we'll try to get some responses back. We have a couple of other folks that want to testify. Mr. Gordon, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and legislators. I think I'd just have general remarks, and not questions, but observations, and represent that we're willing to help and assist in this process that you're going through, this utility restructuring. My name is George Gordon. I'm the president and CEO of College Utility Corporation and Golden Heart Utilities, and its service company, Utility Services of Alaska. I have here with me Bill Gordon, who's the vice president of its holding company, FSW, and Andy Warwick, its chairman. We thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. We're here today to give a little flavor of the industry view of the difficulties that are being experienced and potential solution. And the frustrations that the utility side feels sometimes in dealing with the commission and its staff. You probably have not had too much utility participation in these forums because, and I would quote from page 19 of the NRRI report, which says, many APUC members referred to dismay to a lack of timeliness in decisions, a concern that staff felt was shared by the regulated industries. And the regulated industries toe a line because they don't want to cause difficulties with the people who regulate them and, by extension, the people that legislate for them. We'd like to suggest that the legislature has a very strong role to play in providing possible solutions to some of the difficulties that are being experienced at the commission. We'd like to urge the legislature to exercise its oversight authority. This basically is the only body that has that authority, since the commission is a quasi-judicial agency. We believe the sunset review process will be very helpful, and in fact, the only opportunity to provide the help that the commission needs at this juncture. College Utilities Corporation is a sewer and water utility providing services to the west of the city of Fairbanks, and has been in business and regulated by the commission for over 30 years, and we believe our relations are good with the commission. Golden Hour Utilities, recently acquired from the city of Fairbanks, provides those same services to the city of Fairbanks ratepayers, and we're struggling with trying to provide those services in an efficient and cost-efficient manner. It makes us the largest private water and wastewater utility in the state of Alaska. And as such, we need good, efficient regulation. The FSW shareholders and board members are 10 in number and are longtime Fairbanksons and are acutely interested in getting good regulation and good rates for its ratepayers. We've experienced, and other utilities have experienced, difficulties in getting timely decisions from the commission. I would quote again from the NRR report at page 24 about interviewed members. Several of those interviewed expressed strong dissatisfaction with the time required to write orders and the quality and content of those orders. And I think Chairman Cotton has spoke to that, about the difficulty of getting orders when there's not enough people that are qualified to write them. And I would say this extends even down to what should be simple issues with simple orders. Perhaps it would be helpful if some of the procedures are streamlined so that the simplest and most non-contested items didn't need the full weight of the extensive order writing. There's apparently some difficulties with the struggles internal to the commission. I think this internal report that was commissioned that speaks to that, and I would urge you to consider reading some of the comments in the appendix of that report. Some of the delays that are experienced by utilities do result in higher costs to ratepayers, and unfortunately those costs are sometimes hidden in the consumer's rate, so we can't see what they are. The delays that are experienced by utilities have to be passed on, or the administrative time has to be paid for, and it generally results in somewhat higher rates. What should be done? I think the legislature needs to be involved, and this committee is obviously going to do that. Even when the budget is being cut and the state doesn't have as much money as it believes it needs, I think that shouldn't rub off on the Alaska Public Utilities Commission, because it is in essence funded by utility ratepayers. And freeze that was spoken to earlier by Chairman Cotton probably should not apply to the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. It needs the professionals, it has more work than it can possibly get done, and while I'm not an advocate of throwing money at any problem, it's apparent to me that they don't have the resources necessary to tackle the problems. Can't make timely decisions because they can't get their work done because there aren't enough people to do the work. It's going to be obvious to me anyway that there's going to be more demands on the commission time because of the competition and continuing in telephone. There's a seem to be a filing a day and the coming competition or potential competition in the electric industry. The commission by its nature now is run by a committee, and that poses difficulties, and Chairman Cotton has done his best to try to explain that in a fair fashion without pointing fingers, and that's good that he's done that, but I think that there's a potential for solutions to be gained here, because there are a number of commission seats that may be up for appointment in the very near future due to either normal expiration of term, retirement, or resignation. And the commission urges, I think, or I urge the legislature to take a strong role in ensuring that the governor appoints and that the legislature confirms good, hardworking, knowledgeable commission members. I would emphasize the hardworking and knowledgeable. Chairman Cotton needs some help. I also believe that it's probably appropriate that the legislature consider giving more authority to perhaps the chairman of the commission to go with the responsibility they have. He's got a huge responsibility, and all commission members do. And I think sometimes he doesn't have the authority that goes along with it to control or exercise more control on the staff and the workings of the commission itself. And perhaps that would be one way to get more bang for the buck from the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. I think that it's important that the commission be staffed properly, and I pointed out that I don't believe it is. And lastly, I again encourage the legislature to strongly scrutinize the governor's potential appointments to the commission to ensure, again, that there are hardworking and knowledgeable commission members to help clear up the backlog and give the utilities the straightforward, efficient regulation that they need and want and expect. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, I'll invite
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Roper.
Yeah, brief question, Mr. Gordon. Mr. Okay. Gordon, you talked about the authority of the chairman. Do you think if the chair was not appointed by the governor but was elected by the commissioners of the commission, that would create a natural greater level of authority within the commission?
I'm not sure I have a position one way or the other. I don't know that one is better than the other. But whoever the chairman is ought to have more authority over what kind of staff he has and what kind of rules and regulations are adopted regarding the control of the staff and the control of the workings of the commission, not the decision, but how it works.
Mm-hmm. And this is the chairman of this committee. I think I'm hearing that as well, and my conversations is that, and perhaps it needs to be articulated in the statutes, you know, you have to have somebody to hold accountable when you have variable decisions like this, and you have a really complex and technically complex staff to work with. You know, having run a marine highway system, I can't hardly imagine not having somebody to hold accountable. So I think that is something that this committee is going to have to take a look at. And you'd help us with that, Chairman Cotton.
You go down with a ship in the marine highway.
Yes, and here we just electrify.
I don't think it's any different here.
You have to hang on to both ends, Sam, if you don't do it right, see. All right, well, next I'll go to Mr. Vasconi. And Mr. Vasconi, I'm not going to take Bob Lohr since we have the chairman of the APUC here. We'll deal with you a little later here. We're running out of time. Mr. Vasconi, if you could give us a very brief, hopefully, testimony.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Mark Vasconi, and I'm AT&T Alaska's Director of Regulatory Affairs. Thank you, Chairman Pencil. I have a very brief statement for the committee. AT&T Alaska supports the extension of the APUC to June 30th, 2003. AT&T Alaska supports HB 62 as written. We also support the Commission's request for more resources. While the ratepayer is indeed the ultimate source of funding, we at AT&T Alaska have never received a complaint from any of our customers regarding the level of the regulatory cost charge. I want to commend the Commission for keeping that regulatory cost charge at a reasonable level that hasn't gained any public scrutiny, at least to us. Or any public outcry back to Alaska, but given the backlog of cases and the resources that I think are required in order to clear things, I think any additional funding would probably be warranted. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Representative Roper?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vasconi, you may have heard the testimony earlier from the Chairman Cotton about the establishment of Alaska Universal Service Funds. Do you think the APUC is within its statutory authority to set up the Alaska Universal Service Fund?
I am not an attorney, and consequently, I think my answers might be speculative. I know that there was an attorney's opinion rendered by the Department of Law. It seemed that it was a close call, but it apparently is past muster of the Department of Law. So just looking to that ruling, I believe, I would say it seems that it's on firm legal ground.
Thank you. Chairman, just a quick follow-up.
Representative Roquart.
Mr. Vasconi, isn't AT&T one of the largest payers, universal service charges and access charges for subsidizing rates? And what do you have a corporate policy about the universal service?
Well, our corporate policy for universal service is indeed that we are here to make certain that it continues. We are indeed the largest single payer, certainly of the long-distance companies in the state. I'm not certain if one of the local exchange carriers is larger. They may be, they might not be, it might be close. But we support universal service. We are continuing a path of investment to ensure that universal service continues.
Thank you very much. Chairman Cotton, thank you very much. I think I will ask Jim Rohl to step up to the table now, and I'm sure we'll have plenty of other communications with you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jim Rohl. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Telephone Association, which is a trade association set up on behalf of the incumbent local exchange carriers in the state of Alaska. Our members serve all areas of the state. I come here before this committee, Mr. Chairman, in support of this bill in its present form. We very much